So then, again here in First Samuel 18, the end there, verse 27, Saul gave Michal, his daughter, to be his wife. In verse 28, and Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. So Michal did love him. And Saul was yet to be more afraid of David. And Saul became David's enemy continually. And so already the things were happening there, and Saul could see this. But Michal did help and love David for a while, and she was his wife. And over in 1 Samuel 19 here, verses 11 and 12, when Saul was kind of coming after David, you know, Michal heard this, and she came, you know, David's wife told him and saying, you know, if you want to, you know, save your life, you better go this night. And she helped let him down through a window so he could flee and escape. So they did have some kind of a halfway good relationship going on here. But then as we move along, and I can't go through the history, you know that, we don't have that time. But over in Second Samuel 6, in verses 14 to 16, this is after a big battle. David comes home, and he danced before the Lord with all of his might. He really did. He was really happy. God gave them this victory. And the ark of the Lord came into the city. And but by this time, something was souring a little bit in the marriage. But they were still married. And he had concubines, and he had these wives. And he says, and so she looked out, and she saw David, leaping and dancing around with all these lowly people out there on the street. Well, see, that's where David came from. He didn't have this high-minded attitude. And she despised him in her heart. And he danced, and he had a great time, and he was accused, and blah, blah, blah. You know, you can go on with this. And so, but David did, he made burnt offerings, and he did different things, and he blessed, you know, that the people would be blessed, and that he would be blessed, and they came back after war, and it was a, you know, they purified themselves that way. But Michal was already having a problem here with him. So in chapter 11 here of Samuel, 2 Samuel 11, starting in verse 3, it's actually starting in verse 2 here. this is the famous story about David and Uriah and Bathsheba. And we all know that, so we'll just go through this very quickly. But it came to pass at eventide, verse 2, that David arose off his bed, and he couldn't sleep, and he walked on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof, he saw this woman washing, bathing herself out there on another roof out there. And he didn't just kind of look and say, I shouldn't be looking over there, you know, I'm invading somebody's privacy. And obviously they wouldn't be doing this if they thought somebody could see. So I'll be a man. I'll have some type of godly character. You know, I did look, and now I will turn away and give the person their privacy. That's what he would have expected anyone to do to him, but of course the golden rule doesn't always apply, does it? We don't do that. And he kept on looking and said, "This is a beautiful woman." And so now he didn't just let it go. He inquired about her, and they said, "Well, this is Bathsheba, you know, and she's the wife of Uriah." And so David goes, "Yeah, well, that's okay. I'm king." And so he sent messengers, and they brought her to the house, and they went to bed together. This is not a good thing. You know, he is the king. And he slept with her. And he committed adultery. He was married. This was another man's wife. This was not good. This was not good at all. So as the story goes on, he says, well, now the woman comes back a little later, and Bathsheba says, you know, I've conceived, and I am with child. And my husband, you know, he's been out fighting your wars. My husband putting his life on the line to fight your wars, and now I'm pregnant by you. Well, King David was at least smart enough to go, we have a big problem here. But you know what? Let's not just repent of this. Let's take this another step further. And I'm the king, and I can kind of do anything I want. So I'll tell you what. Let's send for Uriah, okay? Let's send for him. And it's some nonsensical thing. Let's get him in here. I'll talk to him. We'll have a little feast. I'll say, well, don't go back to the front right away. You know, don't go back to your troops. Because this man was a real man. Uriah was a man. He led the troops. He's a warrior. And so he says, why don't you just go down to your house and sleep in your house, and he's going to cover all this stuff up, see? Old King David, old Mr. Sharpie, he was going to get around this one, wasn't he? So he says, oh yeah, you go, and then go out tomorrow, then make it back out to the, you know, to the front. And so, but Uriah, you know, he was a man's man. His parents trained him. He had character. He knew the law of God. And he knew what was right and what was wrong. And he says, no way can I come here, sleep with my wife, and be at home with my wife when my troops are out there. No way, I can't do that. And so he slept outside the door all night. And it was reported back to David. And David goes, ah, hey, I thought I had this guy. Well, if he's not going to do it that way, I'll do it. He gets his main captain there, and he says, send this guy to the front line. I mean, right out there. Have him lead them right into battle. Premeditated murder. That's what this is. When you do an act like this, you are part of this. You are the instigator of it. And if a man dies, that murder's on your head. So that's what he did. He did it. Sent him into the hottest battle. Wasn't going to take any chances. I mean, he really plotted on this deal. Sent Uriah out there, and sure enough, boom, guy gets killed. So this was not, you know, a real good thing. And in verse 27, after the mourning that Bathsheba had to do for Uriah, whatever the house rules there were, whatever length of time, then David sent for her in verse 27, and he fetched her unto his house, and she became his wife, and bare him a son, which of course was his son, from this adulterous affair. But the thing that David had done displeased God. It was evil in the eyes. See? That's what the reference says. It wasn't right, and God did not like this. But remember, brethren, this is a man after God's own heart. He just broke four of the commandments, flat out, and probably most of the other ones, and the laws and the statutes and all the rest of the blessings and cursings. You know, how many more can we add on here? But he broke the sixth commandment, do not kill. And he did. Broke the seventh, don't commit adultery. He did. The eighth one, don't steal. He stole from Uriah. He stole. That wasn't his. He stole. Ooh, a number 10. Oh, maybe this was written right for David. I don't know. It says covet. It's, do not covet your neighbor's wife. Oh, he did that too. There was four, and you know, you can keep on going. This was a big, bad sin. This was bad. But yet he was... This is the kind of man, you know, God has right there in his heart. Doesn't stack up, does it, brethren? Does it? You know, what did God do? What did God do? We're right here, 2 Samuel 12. 2 Samuel 12. He goes through this. I believe this is where Nathan came to him and said, you know, that one guy had all these sheep and the other guy only had one. But then the other guy snuck over and took the guy, just the little sheep from the one guy. And, oh, King David was wrath. Oh, he's wroth with this. Where is the guy who stole that one little sheep from that man? I'll kill him. Yeah, he spoke righteously there, didn't he? A little bit more than he realized he spoke. But because of all of this, another prophet here of God talking with him, and he says in verse 9, in chapter 12 of 2 Samuel, he says, "Wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight?" Why did you do this, David? "You have killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword, and has taken his wife to be your wife, and has slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon in that battle. Now, therefore, because of this, the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and hath taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will rise up evil against you out of your own house, and I will take your..." All right, taking that out of your own house. Remember Absalom and all that, trying to take over and taking over the kingdom and all of this. Did he have his wives and concubines? Yeah. "And I will take your wives before your eyes and give them unto your neighbor. And he shall lie with your wives out in the sun," out there in the roof. And that's exactly what they did, for all Israel to see. Just dishonored him. He says, "For what you did in secrecy," you know, "you did it in secrecy." And God says, "But I will do this thing before all of Israel and before the sun." In other words, in the light of day, I'm going to do it. And we know the story of what happened. And remember this. Verse 13. "And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord." Boy, I have sinned against the Lord. "And Nathan said unto David, The Lord also has put away your sin. Thou shalt not die." You know, it really seems like he's getting preferential treatment here, doesn't it? Doesn't it? He still has his kingdom. And there's going to be problems in his kingdom. And he's going to be embarrassed later. But look what he did. Look what Saul did. Look what Moses did. Saul just did a burnt offering when he wasn't supposed to, and wham, he had the kingdom taken away. Does it seem fair to you? It still doesn't seem fair, does it? Because the way it's being explained, it isn't fair. You know, God says that he's not a respecter of persons, but yet, oh, David is this little guy of, you know, he has a heart like mine, and I like him. This is a man after my own heart. Does God have blinders on, brethren? But remember what he says here. "The Lord has also put away your sin, that you will not die." In verse 14, howbeit, "because of this deed thou hast given great occasion of the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme." To blaspheme. See, against God's nation and against God's king and against God. Everyone else is laughing. David's a laughing stock here. "The child also that is born unto you shall surely die." He's going to kill the child. And the child dies. And over in verse 24, it says, "After all this, and he fasted for the child, but the child still died." God is not going to have the bloodline come through this union. He's just not going to have that. He does forgive David. He says, "I'm not going to kill you on the spot." And so after this happens in verse 24, David comforts Bathsheba, his wife, and they lay with each other here, and she bare him a son, and the son came, and they named him Solomon. Now later, he had another son with her. His name was Nathan, as far as I understand, probably named after that prophet. Now it's interesting, as far as I remember in the historical record, don't hold me to life or death on this, but I believe you'll find this to be true. He had these two sons, Solomon. You know, Solomon was the bloodline all the way through to Joseph. And Nathan was the bloodline all the way through to Mary. So it's interesting. And he said he's going to bring out Christ from this root of Jesse, from David. And here are the two sons from this union. And she was free to marry him after his wife, you know, her husband was dead, you know, Bathsheba. But still, you know, it all involved that garbage. But here he took on those bloodlines all the way through. Now let's look at Solomon's life. You know, how many wives did this guy have? 300 some. How many concubines? 600 some. You know, he went around. He's this king of Israel. He was able to build the temple. This is why David could not build the temple of God. He couldn't build it. But Solomon was able to. But look what he did. He put up these pagan temples all over the country for his wives, because he married into all these pagan things. But at the end of his life, in Ecclesiastes 12:13, he does say, you know, the whole matter, the whole conclusion of life is to fear God and keep his commandments. So he did know that, and he knew that was a better way. Even Abraham had concubines too. Because we're talking about wives and concubines and how this all relates. Going to answer the question. In Genesis, you can just jot this down, Genesis 25, verses 1 through 6, when his wife Sarah died, he took on this other wife. In verse 6, it says, it talks about the sons of his concubines. But he put them all away, and he kept them away from his other sons. But did God approve of these wives and concubines? You know, did he? Let's look. Back there, and I quoted this before, Deuteronomy. I'll read it very quickly. I'm going to start moving along here again. Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 through 20. And he says, this is way back. He's telling Moses, when you are come to the land that the Lord your God gives you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like as all the other nations around. And thou shalt in any wise set him a king over you, whom the Lord shall choose. And he tells him this is all going to happen. And he also tells him that there's going to be war and everything else because of a lot of this. So God tells him way in the beginning that there was going to be king over Israel. He knew they were going to go the way of all the other nations. Now you have to remember that this is Satan's world, and it was back then and it is now. Satan is the god of this world, and he's here right now, and he was here back then. Remember that. He says to him in verse 17, in Deuteronomy 17. And this is for the king. He was starting to give instructions to the king. And he says, neither shall he, this king, multiply wives to himself. Duh. God says, don't do that. Don't do that. Do not multiply these wives for yourself. He says that to him. In verse 18, and it shall be when he, this king, sits upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of the law in a book for out of which is before the priest of the Levite. So he has to write really the first five books of the Bible. That's what every king of Israel had to do in his own hand. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear God, and that he keeps all the words of this law and the statutes of all of them, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren. So he thinks he's somebody he's not. So he thinks he can have all these wives and concubines. No, no. God says, don't do that. And that he would turn aside from the commandments to the right or the left. That he wouldn't do that. He would stay in there. And that it would be prolonged, that his days may be prolonged in the kingdom and his children in the midst of Israel. This is what every one had to do that was a king. Very quickly. Did David do this? No. 2 Samuel 5:13. And David took him more concubines and more wives out of Jerusalem. Man after God's own heart. God just told him, don't do this. And he's doing that. You know, what does Jesus Christ say about this? He clears this thing up for us. Here is where we get it cleared up. Now we know King David's life. We know it all. We went through Saul. We went through all of that. We have that in our mind. Now turn to Matthew 19. It's amazing when you really have the true plan of salvation, when you really understand what God is all about, you can start to read in these things and you can start to see it very, very clearly of what is going on. See, starting in verse 3 of Matthew 19. It says, and his Pharisees came to him, tempting him, Christ, and saying, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Have all these wives, see? And he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he that made them at the beginning made them male and female? So he's coming right down to what God did and what he did. And said, for this cause shall a man leave the father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Husband and wife, one flesh. Not three, four, five, eight, just two, man and woman married, one flesh. Very important. Wherefore, they are no more twain but one flesh. That therefore God has joined together, let no man put asunder. And then, And they said unto him, well, why did Moses then command to give this writing of divorcement and to put her away? Well, that's a question. And Jesus Christ, the Son of God, answers it. He said unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts. Now, when did you get the hardness of your hearts? That was from Satan the devil. That was from that satanic spirit that was given to all mankind. But that's not the way God made it. See? When you have the hardness of your hearts, which is Satan's nature within us, you too put away your wives. See? It was written in there because God knew that people were going to live under Satan's world. But from the beginning, it was not so. See, the way God did it in the Garden of Eden, it was not so. That was not so. That should never have happened. But because of the hardness of your hearts, the satanic spirit within us, God allowed this law to be written to cover this that Satan was going to do. You can jot down, you know this, in Genesis 2, verse 24. God says, right out of his own mouth, hey, these are the husband and the wife, the male and female, and they will be twain, they will be one flesh. That's the way God did it from the beginning. Even the apostles talking about in Ephesians 5, verses 31 through 33, in fact, that whole chapter, he's talking about the church being one and the husband and wife. He's talking about them. Now, what else did Christ say? I'm going to tie this all together. I just have a couple of more scriptures to hit, and then we will talk, okay? Matthew 5. Verse 28. Christ says, but I say unto you that whosoever looks on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. So the law was even magnified from the physical law, not to physically do it like King David did, but now with the Holy Spirit really in you as a first fruit, don't be doing that, because you're committing a sin to do that. You're living a way that's not God's way. Why was David a man after God's own heart? Here's the question. We know what he was. What happened there? Let's turn back to 1 Kings. Here's our answer. Here's our answer. And then I'm going to give you an overview which none of us ever had before, which is staggering. This is staggering. 1 Kings 15, starting in verse 4. Why did God allow any of this in Israel to go on? Why did he allow all the disobedience under Satan's world here? Nevertheless, for David's sake, did the Lord his God give him a lamp in Jerusalem to set up his son after him and to establish Jerusalem. Jerusalem had to be established so Jesus Christ could come on the scene. That's what had to happen. And what does God say about David here in 1 Kings 15, verse 5 now? Because David did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord and turned not aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, save only in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. Very important. Do you see what this is saying, brethren? Do you see this? He did what God commanded of him. King David, by, of course, the power of the Spirit that was around him and in him, but it was not as a first fruit. It wasn't as a begettal, or he was not begotten. He was a prophet. He was a servant of God. God says that he did everything that was right in the eyes of the Lord. Everything God commanded him to do, he did. Except that deal there with Uriah the Hittite. See, that's what he had against. Save that matter only. Why? Why? Why was he a man after God's own heart? Let's go back to this one that I told you to remember, and always, always remember this all of your life. 1 Samuel 15. 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. And then I will explain. And Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices? Is that the big thing with the Lord? Or is it as Is it as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey, see this voice of the Lord, to obey is better than sacrifice. Always remember that, brethren. I'm not talking about just being obedient to the Ten Commandments here. I'm talking about what God is doing. He dealt directly with these people. Why is David, you know, this is why David was a man after God's own heart. By the very Spirit, he did obey God. Now listen very carefully to this. David obeyed and always looked to God. Look at his life. In all the things God asked him to do, he ran and did it right away. God didn't come to him and talk to him about Bathsheba or anything else. He did that on his own. That was just a way of life. That was just something that happened within his life. When God commanded him to do this, he did it. And he did it with a passion and a fervor. He did it. He had the priesthood and all the Levites doing just what God wanted done in all of Israel, didn't he? Didn't King David do that? You know, we've been knocking King David, but let's look at the other side. Let's look at the real big side. This isn't going to be a fluff job, brethren. Just wait. There's a reason. The nation, the whole nation was under David. And they did obey God. And they did look to God to lead them. For all those years. They really did, didn't they? All the good stories of David. You know, we didn't read those. We didn't read about Psalm 51 when he cried out to God because of this sin with Bathsheba. We didn't show that, but you know that. Remember that. I especially didn't bring that up before. Remember, every holy day that they kept, every holy day, sacrifices were made for all the people in that nation and the king, that they were covered by God's plan. They were covered by the blood of those oxes and bulls and whatever they were sacrificing. Every holy day and every Sabbath they did this. They had all these sacrifices continually going on. And in God's sight, even though everybody sinned because it was Satan's world, and God knew that. That's why he set up the sacrificial law. Because once Satan got a hold of mankind in the Garden of Eden, man was going to sin until the end. And your loving Father set up a sacrificial system with the laws and the commandments that would cover his nation of Israel and cover King David as well for any sin that he did. Remember Job? Job was righteous in God's eyes. And Job gave sacrifices every day for himself and for his children, just in case someone would sin. That's what it says. You know, they were all covered under that sacrificial law in Israel. And even though they sinned, God didn't hold that on them because he respects his law that he made. He works within his law. That's what his life is. Just like we are all covered by the blood of Jesus Christ and that sacrifice. You know, we're all covered. So was ancient Israel. And so was King David. We still sin, but we're covered by that blood. Why? Why did he cover them? And why did he cover us? Well, so all of us, so we can come up in that first resurrection. That's why he covered us. And why did he have all those sacrifices? For them? That they could come up in that great last day. With King David as king and priest of the people forever. In the great last day, King David's going to come up as king and priest forever. And they're going to all obey God forever. Why did God have just that one thing against David? He was cleared by the sacrifices of all of his other sins. But he did obey everything God commanded him, didn't he? With relish. He just did it. He did it with enthusiasm. Did it with the power of the Spirit that was working with him. And those things were all good and they were great. But why did God hold just that one thing on Uriah against him? Why? He was covered by God's sacrifice and he was pure and as white as snow on everything else. You know why? Because there is no sacrifice for murder. Is it starting to come to you now? There is no sacrifice for murder. God does not provide a sacrifice for murder. Now, when you fought in the wars, being of God's army, and killed people, when you came back, there were sacrifices for you to cleanse you. And you were free and clear and white as snow again. But for murder, premeditated murder, if you kill somebody accidentally, there was all kinds of laws to take care of that. But if it was premeditated murder and you kill them, there was no sacrifice for you. This is why God had this against him. This is why this was the only thing he had against David. Because in God's sight, because of those sacrifices, he was pure. And he did do everything that God said because that Spirit was helping him do that. But this one thing, this murder, for that you must die. God cannot forgive that. It is not in his law. He can't forgive it. It's in his law that a murderer must be put to death. King David premeditated to kill this man. And God had to be against him on that sin. Why? Why? Remember the plan of God. Because Satan murdered God's son. That's why it's in the law. This is how he gets him. This is how he gets Satan. Satan killed his son. And that's why he will kill Satan forever. Because there's no sacrifice. There's nothing in the law that helps him. He has to be put to death. That's the law. Now, King David did die, didn't he? He died. He paid that penalty. And God did have that against him. And he could not take that away. In God's law, murder must The murderer must be killed before the land is cleansed. You can read that in Numbers 35, 16 on. It says that the murderer shall surely be put to death. Verse 21 says the revenger, this is God, the revenger, he's talking about that time in the end time too, that revenger shall slay the murderer. And that murderer, Satan. Now because David did those things, the sword was put upon his house. And the only reason he wasn't killed right then was because God had to establish that line and he had to establish Jerusalem. But King David did die. In verses 30 to 33, it talks about the land cannot be cleansed but by the blood of that murderer. When the great last day comes and we're all there, the murderer stands there, doesn't he? He's the one who killed and murdered God's only son, his first son. And that murderer will be killed forever. And the land will be cleansed, won't it? David truly was a man after God's own heart. Even the wives and the concubines were covered in this satanic world by those sacrifices, weren't they? Even though he disobeyed, even though he multiplied wives and concubines, He was still having those daily sacrifices. They didn't know. You know, live just like today. You sin, they sinned. Give them a break. But they were still covered, and you are still covered. You know, what a loving God that we have. Thank God that He has covered us all, the people in the Old Testament and all of us now. You know, brethren, what joy that we have to look forward to with a God that is consistent, who is all love, and He provided for all of us, all of His children, all of mankind from Satan's society and Satan's world, hasn't He? He covered them all back there with the sacrifices. He's covered us now with the blood of Christ. Was David a man after His own heart? Yes, he really was. He really, truly was. And I can really see that now. And he did do everything that God commanded him to do. Except that one thing where God couldn't give him a break on that because of his law. And thank God for that law. Because that means Satan is going to die. And God will never change that. And we're going to have peace and happiness and joy forever in that great last day. So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope this brought some understanding to this subject. It certainly did for myself. So we will see you all here next week again.